I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on patreon.com/FU Network TV and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
And now, here's Michelle Badusky, keeping it real.
Hey everyone, it is Michelle Badusky, keeping it real with you here on Kick FM Radio at the Sox FU Network or my own website, michellebadusky.ca. Wherever you are joining me today, wherever you are from, thank you. Today's discussion is going to be a little controversial to some, so let's talk about it because today I'm talking about privilege. And have you checked your privilege lately? So let's go back a little bit. Before I get into where the world is and where I am today, I want to talk to you about where I came from. So if you would have asked me about 10, 15 years ago where I stand on privilege, I would have given you this real sob story about my past. Now, for those of you who follow me, you know that I grew up in northern Manitoba. If you've read my book, you would have read about, you know, instances of poverty, addiction, abuse. And almost 20 years ago, 19 years ago, 20 years ago this October, I got clean from my long-term addiction to cocaine. And I got clean with a lot of help from the counselors at the AFM, but I didn't have a whole lot of family support. So it put this really big chip on my shoulder. And I didn't realize it was there until lately. So I want to talk to you a little bit about that because sometimes we are so focused on our own story that we realize or don't realize how privileged we truly are. So working through, once I got clean and as a single mom, I worked my butt off. I put myself back through school and started my company and got a job and went to lots of meetings and did everything that I needed to do to build this new life. And if you would have asked me about 10 years ago, so I started my company 15 years ago and it took me about 5 years to really get into the groove of things, to start making money, to start building this life that I never dreamed was possible. And, you know, I think about it, my son just turned 26 this past April, and I was thinking about him on his birthday. We were, of course, physically distancing, so we weren't together, but I was thinking about when he was born, and I lived in this little trailer in the Palm, Manitoba. It was 10 by 60, so 600 square feet. It had two little bedrooms. One of them was his. My husband at the time, my first husband, was a practicing alcoholic who could not keep a job. Or actually, I shouldn't say couldn't, he wouldn't. It was an abusive marriage. It was just an ugly, ugly time in my life. And this highlight came when I had this little baby who was born 6 weeks premature and we almost lost him. So I was thinking about that trailer when Jesse was turning 26, and I could fit that whole trailer into my kitchen and dining room right now. And it was kind of like this realization of how far I'd come in my life in the last 26 years. And I realized how lucky I really am. Now, usually when people say, oh, you're so lucky, I get a little offended because you know what? I worked really hard to get where I am. It's not like it just kind of fell into my lap and you know, I won the lottery and my life was perfect. It took a lot of hard work. And that chip that I was talking about came from that hard work because I was under this impression, well, if I could do it, anyone can do it. You know, I came from nothing, so if you have nothing, you can do what I've done. And all of this idea of, you know, instead of helping people up, I used to have this idea that I'd made it and they need to do the struggle too. And I was wrong. I was so wrong. I think about some of the things I said maybe 10, 15 years ago as I was kind of climbing up that ladder and actually making some strides. And I realized now what a bitch I really was, how privileged I was, how unaware of my own good fortune and privilege I was. And many people get caught up in that. And I understand it because I did too. I used to think that, well, I didn't come from money. I didn't, you know, I didn't have a family to support me dealing with, you know, abuse, addiction, all of these excuses and all of these weights I carried on my shoulder as an excuse to, you know, think I was better than or holier than thou and go, you know what, if I could do it, you can do it. And that was my attitude. It's like, all you have to do is work hard. All you have to. And I didn't realize how wrong I was. Now, in the past 10 years, I have grown exponentially. And most of that has come from a lot of experience in talking to people. Now, that's one thing I love about the internet. That's one thing I love about social media. And that's a gift that social media has given, at least to me. I see it that way. And hopefully, maybe you do too. And you'll notice I use the hashtag. If you follow me on social media, I use the hashtag take back the tool a lot. Because I believe that. Social media was designed as a tool to help us get educated, help us connect with each other, help us, you know, it's like everyone now has the Encyclopedia Britannica. Whereas when I was in school, that was a really cool thing. You only had the library to do research in. Now we have, you know, we pick up our phone and we've got a whole world's worth of knowledge. And that's a privilege. But that's what it was meant to do. You know, it was meant to be a tool, kind of like a hammer. A hammer is a great tool. Everyone should have a hammer in their house. You could use it for so many things. But if you choose to use a hammer to bash someone's skull in, it becomes a weapon. And social media has become a lot of weaponized connections. And that's a sad thing. It really is, because that's not what it was meant to be. And if we choose to use it as a tool, it's invaluable. And it has been a huge tool for me in my personal growth. And I'm going to explain that, because it has come from a lot of different ways. In the past 10 years since social media, and think about that for a second, social media hasn't been around very long. I remember when Jesse was born at 26, nobody had a computer in their house. The internet was just this concept that people thought, you know, was this kind of sci-fi fiction thing. It was like Skynet from Terminator. And yet when Jesse, I think he was maybe 3, we actually got the internet and a computer. And you remember that dial-up, that, you know, electronic handshake thing? You wanted to download a song and it would take you like 26 hours for a song. And it kind of started from there. So about 10 years ago, when social media really came on, you know, with Facebook and now, of course, Twitter, Instagram, things like that, it's given us this opportunity to connect with others. And I don't know where it comes from in me. Maybe it's because I'm so aware of how isolated I grew up. And I want you to think about that. If you grow up in a small town, if you grow up in a small community, even in the middle of a big city, you know, we have these neighborhoods where we all socialize with people from the same backgrounds, the same religions, same ethnicities, all of those different things. You know, we have Chinatown in Toronto, we have Little Italy, we have, even in Winnipeg, we have, you know, St. Boniface, we have the French communities. We all kind of congregate with people that are from similar backgrounds as us. They kind of look the same. They have the same culture. And that's a great thing. We need that in our life. But if that's all we've ever known, if that's all we ever expose ourselves to, we don't get to see the bigger picture. We don't get to see the privilege. We don't get to see what other people go through and share their experiences. And I don't know if it was maybe my love of travel, especially in the last 10 years, I'm not quite sure where it came from. I know that it was 10 years ago, and my husband and I were on our honeymoon to Mexico. And we actually took 2 honeymoons, and that's a long story. That's a whole other podcast. But right after our wedding, we took off and spent a week laying on a beach in Mexico, which is not something I usually do and not something we've ever done since. It was a good vacation, but it was an eye-opener for me. Because one of the things that we really love to do is experience culture. When we travel, when we eat, when we go to restaurants, we want to try new things. And we kind of have this thing that we do at a restaurant that we go through the menus. And if there's anything that we haven't ever tried before, that's what we order. We order the most obscure thing because you never know if you're going to like it. And life is about experience. Life is about trying. It's about, you know, experiencing the moment. And when we were in Mexico that week, we couldn't do that. We actually were there in a time of a lot of social unrest. I mean, that's kind of when it started. It's gotten a little bit worse now, but that's when it kind of started. So it wasn't really safe to leave the resort unless you were with a guided kind of tour, things like that. And it was an awareness, you know, as we went on this one tour and we're kind of on this bus or van, I can't really remember. And we're driving through the neighborhoods, you know, we came from this resort that was, you know, five-star opulence. And we drove through these neighborhoods of immense poverty. And our tour guide was talking about how you really don't want to be there alone without someone local because of the risk of crime, the risk of violence, and, you know, kidnapping. That was the big thing. It's like the fear that you would get kidnapped and held for ransom because we were rich. And that floored me when I was told that we were rich, because we're not rich. We are lucky and we are, you know, great middle class, but we're far from rich. But compared to the level of poverty the people in those neighborhoods were living in, we were. If we could afford that resort, if we could afford a tour, if we could afford food, we were rich. And that was when I really opened my eyes to how privileged I was, is when I started looking at myself through other people's eyes. And I'm not sure if you've ever had the opportunity to really do that, because we get caught up in our own problems, right? We get caught up in our own issues. I've got bills to pay. You know, I got lots of debt. I spend money like a drunken sailor on payday. So it doesn't really matter how much money you make. It's really how much money you spend. So, you know, I've never really looked at myself that way from that perspective. And our tour guide who worked through the resort was giving us all of these security precautions of when we were there. And now as a woman, I mean, I'm always aware that when you're going into a new neighborhood or you're out and you're having beverages or things like that, about my physical protection. But I've never really thought about it, especially traveling with my husband, who's like 6'2" and a, you know, big burly guy. He's a big marshmallow, but he doesn't look like it. And I never really thought of physical safety. I never thought about, you know, what would happen if something like that happened to me, to my family. And I never thought of how other people saw me as compared to their own lives, because I always got caught up in my own, my problems, my background, you know, how hard I worked and all of this other stuff. And that vacation was a huge eye opener to me. I remember we got to this one resort and we were going ziplining. I almost said skydiving, but that's so not me. We were going ziplining. And when we got to the resort, we checked in and we had to sign the waivers and all of that kind of stuff. And the guy that signed us in took a look at my wedding ring and he said, "That's a gorgeous ring. You don't want to lose it on the zip line. You should lock it in our locker." And I kind of stopped and I kind of smiled because I'm pretty, you know, savvy. And I'm like, no, it's safer on my finger than it is anywhere else. And I just realized that something as simple as my wedding ring was a symbol of privilege and wealth to someone who had very little. And I'll never forget that. It's been 10 years now. We just celebrated our 10th anniversary, and it was a huge eye-opener for me. And we talked about it a lot on that trip. We've talked about it a lot afterwards. It has impacted all of our travel and where we've decided to go and how we interact with the local communities, that kind of thing. But it also made us a lot more aware of our position in society here, in our own community, in our own culture. And it put me on this trajectory of more social awareness, social activism. And I wanted to learn as much as possible about other people's perspective. And that's when you really saw me about that time, really get active online and connecting to social media, because I want to learn, and I still do. All these discussions that we have on my social media page or the political, I want to learn about people's perspectives. I want to learn not just what they think, but why they think that way. What experience did you have that has given you that perspective? What has happened to make you think that? Or what education did you have that has given you that idea or those facts. And I value that more than anything. Not just the education, because I love education. I'm taking college courses right now. I'm upgrading my training. I'm doing all of that, and I'm constantly doing that. I love to learn, and I love to put what I learn into practice. But I also want to know what other people have learned and what it has given them in their life as far as this perspective goes. And that's where the internet and social media is such a powerful tool, because we can connect with people from every religion, ethnicity, people from multiple cultures and countries. It has closed this global gap. I've even had conversations with people in other countries that don't speak English and I don't speak their language, and we've used translator. And as long as we can have those conversations without getting personal, you know, because we do have differences, and I love to debate, I love to argue, and I love to ask the question, why? If you say something, I want to know why. Why do you think that? Why do you feel that way? What is it that you know or have been through that I don't? Because I don't think the way you do, and I want to know why. Maybe you're right and I'm wrong, but I need to know why. And that curiosity has been propelling me the last 10 years. And I've realized and I've learned so much about how wrong I really was with my attitude. You know, I used to believe in the economic trickle-down theory. You know, if we dump money into corporations, it'll create jobs, which create income, which I was wrong. The trickle-down theory, when it comes to wealth distribution in economics, doesn't work. It doesn't work because it is fundamentally flawed by assuming humanity will always put people before profits. And that's wrong. Because in general, and what I'm discovering is the majority of humanity sucks. Because somehow this tool that was designed to bring us together has divided us because we're using it as a weapon. And what I mean by that is, while we can use social media, while we can use the internet to educate ourselves, to make us more aware, to connect us with people with different perspectives and opinions, we can also use it to create a echo chamber of our own beliefs and our own values, so that we, instead of just having, you know, that discussion in the neighborhood with a couple families that think the same way, we can now find people all over the world that believe, you know, if I believe the flat earth or the earth is flat, I can find 10,000 web pages and 10,000 people who agree with me. Every single one of us is wrong. Sorry, you're wrong. But I can find that support in that echo chamber, and it just creates this false sense of omnipotence, right? When you get online, because you're anonymous, you're not face to face. And that's why I do video. And I do a lot of live video, not just discussions, but video, because I want you to know when you're following me on social media or you're listening to one of my podcasts, I'm a real person here. I'm not hiding behind this keyboard anonymity. I'm not a keyboard warrior, you know, spouting off my political or my social values and opinions online and then just kind of hiding and, you know, like trolls do. I'm a real person. This is who I am and this is what I believe. And sometimes my beliefs turn out wrong. Sometimes I'm wrong, and I have no problem admitting that, because that's what education is about. And it's funny to me that when we use this amazing gift, this tool that we have as a weapon, we're seeing what we see in the world today. And it's heartbreaking. And I realize how really privileged we are. So that's my story about how I have come from being that hard-ass, conservative, right-wing bitch who really thought, you know what, if I could do it, you could do it too, and why should I help you? I've already been through it. To someone who believes that it is my social responsibility. Get that. It is my responsibility and my privilege to be in a position to now help those people who are struggling, navigate the waters I've already been through. Because isn't that what it's about? Isn't it about, I've been through it. I know, you know, I know where all of those reefs and rocks are. Why would I let you crash into them again and again when all I could do is reach out and say, hey, here's a map. Or here, this is what I did. Choose to do it or don't. That's a privilege. It is a privilege and a responsibility to help people navigate the waters we have already traversed. And I don't think enough of us realize that, because we're so caught up in ourselves. We're so caught up in our echo chambers. We're so caught up in this idea that we are badly off somehow. And the events of the last few months, actually, the events of 2020 have proven that again and again. You know, we are so spoiled here in North America, and especially Canada. We are spoiled. We are privileged and we are entitled, because we don't really know what it's like to suffer. And I say that as someone who grew up in poverty, who spent a lot of nights hungry, who grew up with abuse and addiction, who went to school hurting and scared and alone. I was spoiled and I was privileged and I was entitled, and I didn't know it, which is where the problems come from. We don't talk about it. It doesn't mean what I went through wasn't real. It doesn't mean I don't have the right to grieve and be in pain. I do. Whatever your trauma is, whatever your experience is, that's your lived experience, and you have the right to that. But what you don't have is the right to use it as a way to further victimize others by diminishing what they've gone through and what they're going through. 2020 saw a whole lot of events happening. You know, it kind of started, Australia was burning down. The climate crisis, it reached its peak with those fires, and the world was, you know, we saw it online. We saw the misinformation and we saw the idiots, you know, screaming about, you know, all of the things that it was not climate. You know, God forbid we admit there's a climate crisis, because we might have to pay a little bit more at the gas pumps. You know, if you can afford gas to begin with, you are better off than 70% of the world's population. Just think about that for a second. Most of the world can't afford to eat. So the fires, then we saw a plane shot down because people are living in fear. They're living in wars. They're living in dictatorships. They're living in, you know, I see people bitch and complain about the state of Canadian politics, and I think, wow, can you imagine what it would be like to live in one of the countries that is war-torn? Can you imagine what it'd be like to be one of the millions and millions of refugees as a parent, where you have to walk for days just to find food for your children, or watch them die from a preventable disease because you don't have $1.50 for a vaccine or some medicine? Or give them water to drink because they're dying of dehydration, but you know the water's not clean, so they're probably going to die of diphtheria or some other terrible disease, but you don't really have a choice. And yet, think of the things we complain about here. Think of the food we throw out. Think of the protests. You know, let's talk about, you know, the lockdown in Canada, which I absolutely hate. I hate the term lockdown. I hate the word quarantine, because we were neither. We have been neither quarantined nor locked down. Look at some of the countries that truly were, where you weren't allowed to leave your homes at all, where you were policed by the military to make sure you stayed indoors. We were asked to stay home, stay 6 feet away from each other, and if we had to leave for essentials, which we still could do, to practice social distancing, use sanitizer, and wash our hands. And yet we saw people protest. We're still seeing it. There was a protest in Winnipeg the day before phase two opened. I don't know what the hell they were protesting, but they were there and they were protesting because somehow they feel their rights are violated because they can't get their nails done. This is the ultimate privilege. This is the ultimate sense of entitlement, when we have so lost touch with our position in this world that we don't even know it. We don't even realize it. Anyone in Canada who is screaming about the tyranny of the government and their rights during this global pandemic needs to give their head a fucking shake. We are so lucky and so privileged. We may have been inconvenienced, but you know what? It's a hell of a lot more to be inconvenienced than to be one of the 7,500 Canadians that have died so far from this disease. 300,000, 350,000 people have died from it globally. in 3 months. And yet we still have people using the internet to say, eh, it's just a flu. Why should we, you know, why should the economy suffer for, you know, the old? They're going to die anyways. That's how entitled we become, that we are starting to adjust our values and judge who should live or die based on our own personal inconveniences. And now we are watching the riots in the U.S. The U.S. is almost burning down. They're on the verge of another civil war, spurred on by their president, who is probably one of the biggest advocates of racism and divisiveness that I've ever seen. I've actually had to stop watching the things that he tweets and the things he says in the news because it's beyond disgusting. And yet, I'm watching other people say, well, violence and rioting is going to solve nothing. You know what? Maybe you're right. But decades and generations of peaceful protests haven't worked either. We're actually further, I think we're further behind on the fight against racism than we were in the days of Martin Luther King. Because we have chosen to use the tools that we have as weapons to create more divisiveness, to find those echo chambers, and to somehow spur on this attitude of entitlement. I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime, and it's, I hope I never do again. You know, and if you think that this issue of racism is about white and black in America, you're wrong. It's here. It's in our communities. It's here between Christians and Muslims. It's here between Europeans and our indigenous people. It is here. And we are fueling that fire. And we have been for years. We saw it during the protests here over the pipelines. We see it when we talk about, you know, the COVID-19 resource packages by the government. Well, we want this. We don't want them to have it. You know what? We can actually argue and say, we need more financial support. If you are a senior, you should be arguing and saying that the seniors need more support, that the CPP, the pension plan in this country, has been sorely underfunded for the last 40 years. You should be arguing that. You should be arguing for more money. You paid into it. You should be. But you do not have to be saying, we need more because they don't need it. That is not how it works. It is our social responsibility to help those navigate the waters we've already been through. We don't need to take away from others in order to get more for ourselves. That's like that outdated business philosophy, the one that used to fuel my wrong values that I talked about. I used to believe that. That idea that it's not enough for me to win, you have to lose. Think about that mentality. I don't just want to win. I want you to lose because that's going to prove I'm so much better. That's going to prove my superiority. That is wrong. I was wrong. I want to win. I want the most out of life. I want the best out of life. And you know what? If I can have it and help you get it and we both win, bonus. And you know what? I honestly don't think that we can win as long as we are advocating for others to lose. Look at President Trump. Look at him. Billions of dollars. More privilege. More opportunity than almost any man in the world. And yet look how miserable he is. Look how unhappy he is. Have you ever seen him truly smile? Look how much pleasure he takes in hurting others, in holding them down, in flaunting his success and his power, even on a global stage. If he is an example of what it's like to win while others lose, I don't want it. He can keep his billions, he can keep his power. I don't want it. That is the perfect example of what we don't want to be. And while I'm speaking about him, I'm just going to say this, that I heard a great interview today about the protests in the U.S. And I get the anger. I get the anger. I get the frustration. I get the pain. I get it in a way that I can understand it and I can empathize, but I've never experienced it. Have I experienced sexism? Have I experienced racism? Yes. I thought I did, but certainly not to that magnitude. It doesn't take away my experiences, but when you're talking about generations of institutional and systemic racism that leads to the death of your people. And many different cultures and ethnicities have experienced this. And it is only, you know, not coming to light. We've always known it. But when it's so visceral, when it's so visual, and we actually see a black man murdered by a white cop and other white cops standing there letting it happen, and they have so much confidence and so much impunity that they know they're being videoed doing it and they're okay with it. Because they think their system is right and their system's going to protect them. And so far it really has. He's been arrested, he's been accused, he's been charged, but the other cops haven't. I understand that anger. I've never experienced that level of hate and that level of disregard for who I am as a human. And I pray to God I never do. And that's why I think it is our social responsibility. You know, we have privilege. I don't care who you are. If you're watching this right now, you are privileged. That means you have access to the internet. That means you have access to a smartphone. You have access to so much opportunity. You have access to the greatest tool that we've ever had in humanity. So how are you going to use it? What are you going to do about it? Are you actually going to change something in your world? Are you actually going to try to influence and help others that need to be lifted up? Or are you going to sit behind your keyboard, talk about your outrage, Karen, and then go about life like you always have? How are you going to use your privilege to make the life of others better today? I don't know how you are going to do it. I'd love to hear about it. I'd love you to shoot me a message or leave me a comment and tell me what you're going to do today to make the lives of someone else better. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go down to Minneapolis and start protesting. We all have our own tools. We all have our own power. Maybe it's a conversation with your children about racism. Maybe it's about calling up a friend or a neighbor or someone in your community that you know is struggling and saying, how can I help? Maybe it's about volunteering some time today to your community or donating some money if you have some. I have created a private group on one of my Facebook pages where I'm giving away my own coaching services. I'm trying to do what I can with my privilege. What are you going to do with yours? How are you going to help make this world better instead of just sitting behind your keyboard bitching about how it's all going to hell in a handbasket? What are you going to do today? And how are you going to use your privilege? Tell me about it. And I'll talk to you next week.
You've been keeping it real with Michelle Badusky. You can follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
This is fun! The FU Network.